three. This is the first rule of three of May.
Happy May.
happy May, everybody. And it occurred to me, Brian Miller, on the other side.
Hello.
That the first week of May is rife with holidays.
It's crawling with them like fleas, which is how I feel mostly about holidays.
They're small,
irritating, they're hard to get rid of.
It starts out with May Day, which is actually used to be a pagan holiday. It's a Catholic holiday. It was celebrated in my school. Usually they parade the statue of the Virgin Mary around the church.
Oh, I'm sure she appreciates the walk, you know.
and you get to see all the cracks that aren't normally visible when she's stationed on the left side of the altar there. And that's May Day. I'm not sure what May Day is. It means something in communist culture. It means something in.
It's a workers' holiday, I believe. It's like Workers of the World Day or something like that.
Which interestingly occurred to me. That the holiday at the end of May that we close out May with is Memorial Day.
Yeah, you go to work and then you go to war and then you're dead.
Yeah, and then but our workers' holiday is not until September.
Right, that's true. That would be Labor Day. Yeah.
Yeah, which is always easy for me to remember because I always confuse the two. I mean, it sounds shameful. Well, I will give you a mnemonic device that you will never be able to is. You go into labor after 9 months of pregnancy.
Oh, yeah. There you go.
How about that?
Going to stick. That's sticky. I like that. Yeah. It's funny. You know what's funny is that it's not – I don't mind that I don't even remember them so much or that I don't – can't I always mix them up or whatever. It's not like I'm wildly disrespecting the veterans intentionally or something. But I always like when you're like Labor Day's coming up and you're like, oh, we got Memorial Day coming up. And people are like, oh, Labor Day. It's like, calm down, Captain Calendar. Like, I don't know. That's one of those things that people are inordinately impressed with themselves about remembering.
I'm going to be woefully ignorant here on history of why the end of May is Memorial Day,
I believe is it not either VE or VJ Day?
I'm guessing.
I'm fairly certain that Memorial Day.
Because I know Veterans Day is Armistice Day.
Yeah.
That I know. But it's interesting. It's interesting that they would put. That they would make sure when they defined the two holidays, it almost seems like they said, well, we don't want our Labor Day to be associated in any way with the communist holiday, which supplanted the Catholic holiday, which supplanted the pagan holiday.
So, yeah, and what's interesting, too, is because of – I don't know if you've noticed this, but because a certain – sort of more left-wing – there's more left-wing crossover of both the kind of communist workers' holiday and the, you know, out there pagan folk who do their weird pagan – there's a big May Day parade, you know, all the crust punks and the artists and stuff come out for it. And they kind of combine the workers' part of it with it now.
That would actually be interesting to see in North Korea, to see a giant maypole.
Shaped like Kim Jong Un.
Kim Jong Un goes for the world's largest maypole.
It's 6 feet tall.
A million soldiers and a million ribbons.
You know, it would be 6 feet tall and one guy, but he'd be like, nope, this is the biggest one. We got it. You know what's interesting?
Actually, they could do it around one of their intercontinental ballistic missiles.
Oh, there you go. That's a perfect idea.
It would be one of the most functional maypoles ever. Because it's they don't seem to get very high off the ground anyway.
Yeah, at least they find something that they're really good for.
Do you think they're actually failing those ICBMs, or do you think that we're shooting them down?
One of those things that you'd never know, and that's also one of those things that if they successfully did one, we might never know. I mean, that's a hard thing to check. You kind of have to trust the government on that one.
Oh, okay, that's easy.
But
moving forward from May Day.
No, I don't mean that you do, but I mean, I think it'd be foolish to assume in any in any of the three cases that you're definitely getting the right information.
Because I think it'd be rather hard
to cross-check. You know what I mean? Like, who's going to... I don't know.
I was just looking at the segments half over, and we still got at least two more holidays to deal with.
Well, one more thing on May Day while we're on war, by the way. I always wondered why you say May Day when your ship's going down. Does that have anything to do with the holiday? I found out, completely unrelated. It is a homophone. May Day is essentially a mangling of the French word, which is like M apostrophe A-I-D-A-I-Z or something, which sounds like Mayday, which means help me. So whenever you're crashing, you're actually saying, I'm French, I'm French, I'm French.
Yeah. Well, you know, it seems to me that there should have been a more adequate warning rather than taking help me from the nation most likely to surrender.
it's
Mayday. Mayday is probably like the European version of calling wolf.
Yeah, I think it should have been Sacre Bleu, which is just way more fun to say. Sacre Bleu, Sacre Bleu, Sacre Bleu. That's a way better thing to yell while your little biplane is about to crash into a cornfield.
But moving forth through the first week. The next one hits is a relatively new holiday.
And do we skip over May the 4th too, the BSE Star Wars holiday?
Oh, no, you missed my inference there. I said moving forth.
Oh, there you go. I did. Sorry.
We get to the newest holiday, which is, and it started just as a pun, but it's actually people are starting to celebrate it.
Yeah.
It's for anybody who doesn't know, and I think everyone knows what May the 4th is now,
right? Especially you're on Twitter.
Yeah, it has become Star Wars Day, which I can't think of another film franchise that has worked its way into the national conscience so much that it's actually become a holiday. It's Super Bowl is probably the closest media manufactured holiday to that.
Yeah, I'd go with that. I think that's accurate. But you're right. I mean, there's no Hogwarts Day. You know, if there was anything, I think Harry Potter would probably be the closest in line to generate something.
I would say Bilbo Baggins' birthday is probably a little bit more. Because you got 40 years running on that one at least.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. But I think what I think is interesting is it seems implausible that either of those would have the level of consciousness that May the 4th has for whatever reason. You know? And yeah. I know it's weird. It's weird because I'm fine with Star Wars. I enjoyed the new Star Wars, but the fervor over it does get exhausting to me. Like, can we talk about anything else, you guys? You know what I mean? Like, and I have no problem with people liking Star Wars, you know? It's just like, oh, May the 4th. Everybody who's already making Star Wars jokes every other day in my Twitter feed now makes 9 Star Wars jokes in the same day.
Well, and of course, today is May the 5th. Or if you took high school Spanish, you know it's Cinco de Mayo.
Yeah, which as I have been trying to push, this is my new campaign, is Cinco de Mayo is the new St. Patrick's Day. That's when the cool people go out and have a beer and chill and on a patio in this nice, beautiful May weather here.
Well, I don't know if it's ever going to happen because it also seems that May the 5th is Cultural Appropriation Day.
Yeah. True.
Is that now there's some sort of, you know, whereas you know, with Irish it's green beer and Guinness and corned beef and cabbage, and it's been that way forever, is now people are starting to say, no, if you celebrate Cinco de Mayo, you're guilty of cultural appropriation.
Yeah, which is funny because there's no more appropriated culture than the Irish, mostly by people who claim to have some Irish blood. You know, like people are obsessed with the idea. It's like if you went back 100 years and told people like, oh, in modern America, people will be excited to say they have Irish blood. They'll be like, there's no possible way. Historically, that is a really extreme 180 from every no Irish allowed to every jackass with a Notre Dame tattoo on his arm.
Excuse me, you can't serve Lucky Charms on St. Patrick's Day, okay? And you can't go over 10 minutes in a segment of the Rule of Three.
So here we are.
I don't know much about Cinco de Mayo. I'm never sure what it's all about. But I say I want you and you don't believe me. You say you want me, but I've got.
And on segment two of the Rule of Three, the stage has been set politically at this point, at least presidentially, I think. It seems pretty inevitable. Surprisingly, more inevitable that Trump will be the nominee than Hillary, even though they're both pretty much a done deal. What do you think about that, by the way, before we get to our political predicting? I want to do some predictions. What about Bernie? Well, there's a path to block.
Yeah. Yeah.
He's just a jackass, right?
Well, you know, he still thinks let's face it, he's a communist. He can call himself a socialist. He's a communist, and communists believe in uprisings. And he believes if he can create enough of an uprising that there's no way that Hillary will be the nominee. That's basically it. And it's interestingly, a friend of mine just posted on Facebook today a picture of a Cuban protest. And say, here's a picture of a Bernie Sanders rally that the media ignored.
That's a good meme.
He says it's in California. I'm sorry. He says, here's a California Bernie Sanders rally that the media ignored. So he was not even aware that's Cuba.
So he wasn't even trying to be a joke.
No, it was not a joke. Somebody played a joke on him. Because the Bernie Sanders, the Sandernistas, as I've heard them called.
That's kind of funny. That's a good portmanteau
Believe that there's going to be a popular uprising. They really believe that Bernie Sanders is the most popular candidate out of all of them. And that if they continue to support and they continue to march and they all... go to where are they? Atlanta? Is that where they are this year?
I don't know. That's a good question. If they all converge in Atlanta.
If they all converge in Ohio like they did in Chicago in 68, mm-hmm. they will be victorious.
I agree. Which is funny because it's like, well, you have this whole primary election thing for the whole purpose of finding out who people want. I mean, it's like. Yeah, Hillary got the votes. That's why she's in the lead by a lot.
You are the Democratic Party.
Yeah, and I'm all for if everybody in a landslide said we do want Bernie. All right, I guess that's the guy. I mean, it's kind of the same way where while Trump is obviously an appalling cartoon of a politician, when they were talking about contesting the convention, it's like, well, I'd be pretty cheesed. If me and all my buddies went out and voted in the system that we set up, and then the top party leaders just didn't like our choice.
Yeah. No, absolutely. And the irony of it is Hillary, I believe, is ahead by 3 million votes. However else you do the math, Hillary is ahead by 3 million votes.
Which in the primary is a lot.
Yeah. And I would bet money. I would bet a large sum of money that a lot of the Bernie Sanders supporters If they were of voting age 15 years ago, we're saying Al Gore got more votes.
Yeah, probably. You know what's interesting is at this point I'm pretty much settled into being a Hillary guy and I'm fine with that. And it's surprising when I say that to people how much ire I get. From everybody, less from conservatives, by the way, more from Bernie types.
Well, you're a Minnesota comic. You are in the heart of it. Your entire I wouldn't say your entire, but a lot of your social connections are all going to be Bernie supporters.
I guess they are. But that's what frustrates me is that being a mild Hillary supporter over Bernie is not, It's not exactly the equivalent of going out and pulling people out of their homes and rounding them up and putting them in camps and forcing people into different schools. But that's kind of the way you're treated.
The supporting Hillary, you support camp? I'm sorry.
Oh, no, it's like you're a fascist if you support Hillary, according to the Bernie people. It's like, it's frustrating to me when somebody is essentially a degree and a half away from you politically that you treat them like they're the total enemy. I find that to be completely – I think it's useless to think of Democrats and Republicans as the enemy. I think it's much better to say, like, what do we have in common? Let's start there and work our way. You know, we're going to have some disagreements, but that's fine. But I've always thought it's counterintuitive to always try to, like – I've always thought the general path of saying, what do we have in different is not productive. We always have more in common than we think we do. Start there and work your way out.
Yeah, I've got friends. I've got friends that are that are, you know, pretty far left. Mm-hmm. And my attitude has always been is that we want the same things. It's just we differ on how to get there.
Yeah, exactly. And I think as long as you kind of keep that in mind, it's a lot harder to like vilify somebody and be angry. You know. Be furious about it. It's like, well, no, they don't want to hurt anybody. We're just trying to figure out what's the best way to help everybody.
The trouble is on the left. Mm. There's been established this notion that this enemy of the people are corporations, and corporations have been painted as the bogeyman for so long that. When a candidate comes up and says, I'm not going to be, you know, I'm not friendly with any corporations, then people say, well, that's it. This is the guy. This is the Maud Dib. This is the Messiah. This is the Christ. This is the one we've been waiting for.
Well, the good news is they got a brand new bogeyman now. Wow. Right. And so Trump with the nomination. So I was kind of curious to get your take. A comedian friend of ours, who I won't mention, I guess, because he might not want me to mention, but is convinced that Trump is going to win. He's not happy about it. But he's convinced that Trump is the secretly the odds-on favorite. What do you think? What do you think? How is it going to shake down by the time we get to November?
Here's my opinion. My opinion is that Trump is a wild card.
Mm-hmm.
Is you don't know what Trump is going to do from one day to the next.
Sure.
I believe that Trump can win if Trump wants to win. But I was never convinced that Trump was actually running to win. It was my belief that Trump was running to put Hillary in.
I have heard that theory from you, maybe first, but from a couple of other people that I think it's – I don't know if I believe it, but I do think it's fascinating. It might work that way.
I believe that if he did not get the nomination, that he would have gone third party. And there's a good chance that he threatened that in private, and that's why the other two dropped out.
I think he would have gone third party for sure. I kind of always thought he would. If nothing else, then he's definitely a guy who lives by the momentum of publicity.
Right. But so by going third party, I mean he would have ensured a Clinton win. So that's what I think. I think he was the plan. I mean I'm not going to say I think that. There's a good chance that. Mm. There's also a good chance that the guy's for real and the guy is planning on winning. And I think if the guy wants to win, I believe he can win. Because here's what he's got on his side. He's got the blue-collar vote.
Mm-hmm.
And that has been traditionally Democrat.
The white blue-collar vote.
The what?
The white blue-collar vote.
Maybe. Maybe. I don't think black folk, in my experience, aren't as enthused
about Trump.
Pardon?
Black folk, in my experience, are not as enthused about Trump.
Black blue collar?
Yeah.
Hmm. I'm not convinced of that because I think the black blue collar worker is just as enraged about the Mexican that comes in for less money.
Well, that's the other thing. Then there's the Hispanic voting bloc, which is a pretty significant voting bloc to contend with.
Yeah. There's no question he does not have the Hispanic vote. However, Hillary will not have the youth vote.
No, she doesn't seem to be channeling that. Also, Hillary.
But she's not going to have it. After she beats Bernie, it's over.
Sure.
So you know, I think Trump can piece together the demographics he does have towards victory. You know, of course, the big question is which candidate is going to be indicted first.
Right. Well, you know, in a weird way, his advantage is he can't be dinged because he's never really claimed to have any significant morality. Like, what are you going to say about Trump that's worse than what Trump just says? Whereas if she can be dinged, you know, with an email or, you know, whatever. So you never know. So what do you – real quick before the segment's over. If you had to call it right now, flipping a coin in the air, who's the president on November 10th?
Hillary.
Okay. But Trump is – but you don't think the Trump thing is an outside – it's not that far out there to think he could win.
No, I don't. I think he can win. I just don't know. I think that the odds that he does not want to win, combined with the fact that it's a 50-50 split, weighs me more towards a Hillary victory.
All right, and this weighs us toward the end of the segment. So we'll check back in with this several podcasts from now. And on the final segment of Rule of Three, shout out, by the way, to CFACT and Bill Giles or Gillies. I forgot to have Gillies, I think, at the University of Minnesota. They had me in for a private gig at the school, which was really fun. They heard me on Up and Atom, our pal's radio show on AM 1130, and booked me for a private.
The irony of you doing a conservative function is just overwhelming to me.
Well, here's it's funny. It's sort of ironic, and then not, because I'm really more apolitical than anything. I was like kind of a moderate lefty who also sort of doesn't care that much. You know, it's kind of like I feel about politics the way I feel about like the Kentucky Derby. Like I'll kind of watch it right at the end, and I'll have a passive rooting interest, but I don't think about it much before or much after the race.
You don't actually put any money on
it. I don't put any money on it. Exactly. That's kind of my push toward politics. It's just not an important part of my life. But you know, and these guys, they heard me on the show and they booked me. And I told them, I said, hey, just so you know, I said, I'm not really, I mean, I'm not like a lefty guy, super lefty guy, but I'm not conservative. I'm probably moderate lefty, if anything. And really, I don't talk about politics. And he said, no, just come on in and do a gig. And it was interesting because the private gigs, I think, is something people don't know much about. They think of clubs and they think of corporates. But private gigs can really be anything.
Well, I don't even think people think about corporates. I think people think clubs and sitcom.
Yeah, and maybe a theater or whatever, you know. But
clubs,
yeah.
Theaters, late night, and sitcom. Netflix specials, and people don't realize how much, you know, where you can book a comic.
Yeah, and the answer is pretty much wherever you pay us enough to be. I mean, it's like, and there's times where, you know, I'm sure you've done a setup that you knew was going to fail, but it's like, I remember doing a private party. It was like corporate technically, I guess. But I remember the setup was so terrible, and I was going to be they were going to do a comedian for 20 minutes, and then a band for an hour, and then a comedian, and then a band for another hour, and a third comedian.
Well, and at least you, yeah.
I was the third comedian.
Yeah,
done,
you don't,
donezo.
Yeah, I think the adage goes, and it goes way back, is that once people start to dance, you can't do comedy.
Yeah, and it's totally true. But they were paying me so much that I remember I was getting like 75 cents a second. I think, right. I figured it out in my head. And so the whole time I was on stage, just doing my act, I, you know, put a smile on and I gave it to him, you know, then no one was listening.
Just in your head where you just heard the cash register,
yes.
Door banging at what?
Like a slot machine. I was trying to literally picture quarters spilling out of a slot machine onto a growing pile on the floor and thinking all those quarters are going to be mine if I just keep, you know, stay up here and talking. So what's interesting is like, so this gig was really fun. I had a really great time. The kind of a libertarian group, of guys, but a lot of ladies in there too. And one guy brought his mom and his grandma, and that was the guy John. They were really nice. But, you know, these private gigs are never...
His mom and grandma probably love you on the radio. That's probably why.
Oh, nice. I hope so. They were like, all really,
you want to see the Brian Miller live? The guy from the radio?
But it's you know, and we get so used to in clubs, you know, everything's very... Even a bad club is usually reasonably set up. You know, you got your light, your spotlight, and your microphone, and your, you know, all this.
Yeah, most people, once they've invested the money into a club, pretty much know the formula for setting up a comedy show.
Right, whereas privates, boy, you never know what you're walking into. And so, like, in this case, we were in a college conference room, full lights on, no microphone, no stage. The audience is actually above us in, like, a lecture hall type setting.
Yeah, but, well, then at least you've got the acoustics.
Yeah, so the acoustics were in your favor.
The room is shaped to get the acoustics out, so that's not entirely because that's the thing. That is rule one, is that everybody in the room has to hear, because when you're a comedian, that's, you know, a stand up, a pure stand up. If you don't juggle, if you don't mm-hmm. if you don't have a puppet, if you don't have a rabbit in a hat, all you've got is your jokes.
Yeah.
And if they cannot hear every word, the jokes are not going to work.
Yeah. And the mitigating factor, the biggest one is, does everybody really want to listen? And, you know, this was a great audience. So, like, I feel like you could have a great comedy show if you all just gathered in a circle around a tree and I stood by the tree and I talked loud enough that everybody could hear. We could have a really good time. You know?
Yeah. Oh, well, you can make them want to listen, though. That's the other thing. You can make them want to listen if enough, you know, if you can get enough people listening.
Right. But
if you're battling, if you don't have sound, you can't even get that minority to start, you know, the laughter and the applause and the, you know, the people are like, well, what are they listening to? What's going on that I'm missing? You can't do that. So sound is number one.
Sure.
So,
oh, agreed.
But I will be honest. I've done private shows. Mm. Where I contact them and they give me a price and I say that's perfect mm-hmm. and I say, what kind of sound system do you have? And they say, well, we don't really have a sound system. And I say, well, you're going to have to get one. And then they say, well, that comes out of your end. And then I say, you know, we don't really need a sound system.
I mean, because we think there's almost like a some sort of shifting balance of like, if the audience is 100% eager, like if I was a Jerry Seinfeld walking by and decided to start talking in a park and doing some free shows, people would be so eager to see Jerry Seinfeld that they would rush over and they would give me their full attention and they would do everything they could to hear the show, right? And then there's the opposite is the people who actively wish there was not a comedian at their corporate party. They would love it if you would shut up, right?
Yeah.
And so then in the middle are just all those factors
this is their only chance to actually put the moves on the girl five cubicles down.
Yeah, and you are blocking that effort. But it's like, so then like the lighting and all the, so then at that point the stage, the lighting, the particularly the amplification especially, but all these things are now like factors that are kind of helping you hopefully win the people who are somewhere in between those two to push them toward the paying attention side. And it's
well,
all
the
like
light
a battle.
Is number two.
Yeah, the light is big.
The light is number two, because when you turn on that light, people can't ignore it. It's like what's going on over there.
Yeah, and also shutting off the light where they are so that it naturally focuses, you know, they can't
focus,
see each other,
right,
but they can
focuses,
see you.
Focuses the attention, and yeah, and also people like to laugh in the dark better than they do. They like to laugh in the daylight.
Absolutely, 100%.
So I mean, the light is number two. And number three is crowd. But now I'm giving away too much. I think I'm boring people.
Sure. Well, now here's so what are the so private gigs though can take any form. You know, you could be at a. I've done ski lodges where everybody's just still wearing their wet. You know. North Face jackets or
I can't tell you how many coffee machines I've performed in front of.
Yeah, there you go.
I cannot tell you how many times. It's where do you where do you want me to go? You know, where's the stage? They go, well, there's a clear space in front of the coffee machine.
Yep.
All righty, then.
Ever do, like, really early morning comedy?
I did. Well, there's also the college nooner is and I have one that I will never forget. Never forget. I go into, it's like a community college, and they're doing an afternoon comedy show. And you know, I expect, you know, sometimes those are done right. They're done, like you said, in a lecture hall, and people know that it's going to be a comedy show, and you know it's separated. And then sometimes they don't know what to do. So I go into the cafeteria dining area, and I'm expecting maybe the tables are set up. Sometimes the cafeteria dining area has a stage. No, it's just a cafeteria dining area, and there's two rows of vending machines. And a bunch of tables in between, and I get to the venue, and I said, okay, looks like we're ready to start, and she hands me the mic, and I go, well, I'm not going to get an intro or anything. She goes, oh no, just start. And it's, you know, because usually, you know, that makes a difference if you say, you know, please welcome.
It makes,
you know,
a huge difference, because you look kind of like a crazy person if you just wander up to any situation with a microphone and start demanding full attention and talking.
Right. And then I go, and then I say, where do I go? And she goes, well, usually they stand in front of the Coke machine.
What if people want a Coke?
Well, then I could have an opportunity to do my coin trick.
And a little crowd work. Mr. Pitman, I see. Not going for that Dr. Pepper. A little soda riffing.
And speaking of tricks.
Yes.
I hate to pull the tablecloth out from underneath the place setting.
Ooh, there you go.
But I think we're out of time. TimSlagle.com. That's where all the episodes are.
Yes. Also, BrianMillerComedy.com. You can get they're all hooked up there too. You can listen to them there, the episodes there, and find me all my tour dates and whatnot, as well as my Twitter at @RealBrianMiller. Brian with a Y. All that's Brian with a Y. You guys know that.
And we'll see you next week.
See you next week.